With me now on Fresh Air is composer and pianist Anthony Davis, whose new opera X, about the life of Malcolm X, will be given its world premiere by the American Music Theater Festival from June 17th through July 4th. The work was commissioned by The Kitchen, the Manhattan Experimental Arts Center, and will be presented by the American Music Theater Festival as a work in progress. The libretto for X was written by Talani Davis Jarman, who writes for The Village Voice and is Anthony Davis's cousin. The story was written by his brother Christopher Davis, who is also with me. Jazz critic Francis Davis has described Anthony Davis as, quote, the most provocative composer to emerge from jazz in the past decade, unquote. Davis's work has alternately been described as jazz and new music. Since 1979, he's been composing for his 10-piece ensemble, Episteme. Episteme is the Greek word for knowledge. On the liner notes to Episteme's first album, Anthony Davis wrote, "The ensemble concerns itself with the central problem which has confronted the music since the advent of ragtime, the question of the role and function of the composition and what has been a predominantly improvised music." X is Anthony Davis's first opera, but it's not his first theatrical collaboration. He directed Natsaki Shange's Boogie Woogie Landscapes and was the assistant director for her Spell No. 7 at the New York Shakespeare Festival. Last year, he wrote a dance suite in 5 movements for dancer Melissa Fenley. Their collaboration, Hemispheres, premiered last year at the Brooklyn Academy of Music's Next Wave Festival. His music for this dance is featured on his latest record, Hemispheres, on the Gramavision record label, which also recorded his previous album, Episteme. Davis has written commissioned orchestral works for the Houston Symphony Orchestra and the Brooklyn Philharmonic. He's taught music and Afro-American studies at Yale University, where he also received his BA in music. His father, the late Charles Davis, founded Yale's Afro-American Studies Department and previously taught at Princeton University, where he was the first black faculty member. We'll meet Anthony Davis and Christopher Davis in just a minute on Fresh Air. But first, let's listen to the latest recording by Anthony Davis's ensemble, Episteme. This is the opening movement from Hemispheres, which was his suite in 5 movements for dancer Melissa Fenley.
Thank you.
pianist and composer Anthony Davis and his 10-piece ensemble Episteme from the new record Hemispheres, which is a dance suite in 5 movements. And Anthony Davis is with me now. He's just composed an opera called X, based on the life of Malcolm X, that will be performed in the inaugural season of the American Music Theater Festival. The premiere is on June 27th. Also with me is Christopher Davis, who with his cousin Tulani Davis wrote the story for X. Christopher Davis is Anthony Davis's brother and has worked in various capacities in the theater, including acting and directing. He and Anthony Davis have worked together on various music and dance projects dating back to their teaching days at the Educational Center for the Arts in New Haven. I want to welcome you both.
Oh, it's great
to Fresh Air.
Well, thank you.
Anthony Davis, is the music we've just heard anything like the music we'll hear in the premiere of X?
Well, in this particular piece, which is entitled "Walk Through the Shadow" on the record, I have adapted as a theme for Malcolm's pilgrimage to Mecca, and I call it kind of as shorthand kind of Mecca music, and it will be a piece for a male chorus and Malcolm solo, and with the ensemble playing as well, and it focuses on a lot of this. It begins with has the pilgrim singing from the Quran. Actually, I use it. We use an Arabic text from the Quran, and basically establishing the G pedal point that you hear in the record. Then Malcolm sings a solo, which is basically about his loneliness and you know how he's at that point in time. He had been essentially cast out of the Black Muslim movement in America, and had chosen a different path. So that's one of the real pivotal scenes in the opera, and one of the scenes. And I felt I needed music that was really evocative, had some kind of spiritual quality to it. And so this piece will have another life, you know, henceforth in the opera.
There are all kinds of images that immediately come to mind when you talk about opera. When you use the word opera for this, what do you mean? Are we thinking of like a traditional opera at all?
Well, it's traditional in the sense that what I think of opera is that every word is sung. There's no spoken dialogue, and that's, I think, one of the main factors in the creation of the work. And one of the reasons I chose that idiom as opposed to, let's say, the musical idiom, or when you have dialogue and speech, et cetera, is that I really wanted that sense of more abstraction that you get with dealing with when you work with music, work with setting words to music, and in a way, it allowed me to deal with a figure like Malcolm, because otherwise you're always confronted with an actor with the a big problem of saying, well, how do you portray someone who's so vivid in our minds anyway? You know, like, you know, does he look like Malcolm? Does he speak like Malcolm? I mean, those issues are raised. And I think that in a way we circumvent that whole problem by saying, well, he's going to sing. Malcolm now sings and Elijah sings. And in a sense we can then be freer in terms of what we want to say.
Christopher Davis, I think you suggested the idea.
Yes.
Of the opera X. Can you tell us about the origins of the idea for this?
I've always been, the figure of Malcolm has always been a very powerful one for me. I think that a lot of times people have approached Anthony and myself and asked us, well, how can you really be writing a piece about Malcolm, because weren't you all so young when Malcolm was a major figure? And it always seemed to me that it's the figures that you run into in your early youth, in your childhood, that are much more vivid for you than the your experience of any major figure, whether he be political or moral or religious or whatever, is always much more powerful the earlier you encounter them. And I think we always thought of Malcolm in mythic or epic terms, that you felt the sweep and the power of the life, and you felt the tremendous upheaval of the various transformations that he forced himself through, that here was a man who was actively trying to create a life and a world for himself and redefining what he was as a person, and as a result of it, redefining who all of us were. And it's that kind of heroic struggle that, if you wanted to use a loose term, you could describe as operatic. You know, or just epic.
So he was an important figure in your family?
Well, I think he was an important figure, I mean, for black people in America in general. And I think that's, and my other intention is that essentially the history of black musical theater in particular, especially as witnessed on Broadway recently, has been essentially without content, without really anything to say about any of the issues that really concern us. And one of the ideas was with this is that I really could focus on a character who was really pivotal in how we think of ourselves as a people and what our role is in relation to the United States of America. And it seemed to me, Malcolm, in a way, there's always was this tie for me musically, too, in a sense, because in a way Malcolm was to politics the way Coltrane was to music. I mean, in a way, they're always sort of linked. There's this kind of a spiritual link between the two. And that's something that was that interested me as well. I mean, even though I don't think I'm going to be drawing necessarily upon what some of Coltrane's musical ideas, but I think there's a certain excitement, certain positive rethinking about what black people are in America that I think came as a direct result of people like Malcolm and John Coltrane, and as a result of I think the influence of the Black Muslim movement, which I think is something I was interested in working with.
Which part of Malcolm X's life are you going to describe in the opera?
We want to do the whole thing. I think that's another way in which I referred to it earlier as an epic. And we felt that the whole experience that we're trying to create in the opera is, in a sense, framed by two murders. First, the murder of Malcolm's father, who was actively organizing for the Marcus Garvey movement in Michigan in the 20s, through Malcolm's own assassination in the 60s. And we feel that there's a direct thematic connection and a structural connection that we're building in the piece between these two events.
This is a kind of family venture. You're both brothers, and Talani Davis, who's the librettist, is a cousin.
Right.
I know some families like really struggle to bring their sons and daughters and cousins together, and it never really works. Is your working relationship something that happened naturally, or were you like officially encouraged by your family to work together?
I don't think so. I never felt really particularly encouraged along those lines. I think how it happened. Well, with Talani in particular, I met Talani later on. I mean, we had sort of fallen out of contact, and I had gotten into the music, and I was playing with Leo Smith at the time, and I came to New York to hear the Art Ensemble of Chicago, and there was Talani, and I hadn't seen her in like 5 or 6 years, and she was very interested in the music, and was writing poetry that was very interesting, so we started meeting then. I mean, I think she thought I was I don't know what she thought of me at that point, but I began, I get more and more involved with my music, and then we started collaborating. I think our first collaborations were with Enosaki Shange. We did Where the Mississippi Meets the Amazon. I composed some of the music for that, and I played in the band at the Public Theater, and then we've done several performances. Duet performances in which Talani would read her poetry and I would create music for her poetry, which would go with the poetry. And there were sort of natural, it was a kind of a natural collaboration that evolved from that. And then it seems that now it's really paid off in a sense because I really understand, so the rhythm of her language and how she, and the way, and a certain quality of the words, and how my music really works with that, because of all these years of doing these performances, and I think she has a real understanding of my music too, and as a result, she's really free to write an epic poem about Malcolm. And essentially, this is a poem. You could look at this whole opera as one long poem, and I think that was the key in looking at the piece to having it really make sense as a. As a total work that really, really could, for one thing, sort of transform history and make it into something that that has some kind of art, an artistic vision in it. And so So you know, Trelawney's creating a real epic poem about Malcolm that I feel very free and actually inspired to work with in music.
Do you find working with family is different than working with other people who you don't know as well in theater?
Yeah, I think that there are special qualities that come into the relationship. One is that you have a sense that no matter what you say, the relationship will endure. I mean, you've been through so many other things that there's a certain freedom that you can get into a knockdown, drag-out phase at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you know that you're all going to be there tomorrow. I mean, you're all going to keep going. And I think there's also an appreciation of each other's forms and an exposure to their work over a long period of time, so that it's almost like in certain ways you anticipate how they're going to be responding to a given problem or a given thing, and you take that into account.
Anthony Davis and Chris Davis are my guests. If you're just joining us, their opera X about the life of Malcolm X will get its world premiere beginning on June 27th as part of the inaugural season of the American Music Theater Festival. Your father, the late Charles Davis, was the head of the Afro-American Studies Department at Yale. He founded that. Was like an official acknowledgement of Black history an important thing in your family? Do you think that has much to do at all with your interest now in Malcolm X, for instance?
Well, I think that's a very complicated issue because it changed. I mean, I remember as a child, essentially, that Black history and Black literature in particular, which is what my father was involved in, Black music, was viewed as part of the whole spectrum. I mean, in a sense, it wasn't viewed as a separate issue from what literature is or what music is. I mean, there was good and bad music. There was, I listened to Art Tatum records and I listened to Rudolph Serkin records. So there's a sense that there was one value, and essentially, an aesthetic value. And then later on, I think there was when my father began getting involved with it, was he sort of went through a whole transformation. That happens, after the assassination of Martin Luther King in 1968, which essentially he had to go back and he began to rethink the idea that of working and looking at Black studies as a separate discipline, and that there would be a real value in creating a Black Studies department. He created the department at Penn State University in State College, and that was a very important period, because there's all this poetry and literature. My father was essentially a scholar in Edwin Arlington Robinson and Walt Whitman, et cetera. I mean, in the American tradition, and now he had the opportunity to reexamine Black literature, the works of Ralph Ellis and Rich Wright, et cetera, and really try to come to some total understanding about what the Afro-American tradition is in literature in particular. And I think that change, in a way, was really I really admired the fact that my father could in a sense react and change and really change his life. It brought, after 1968, and the focus of his scholarship really changed. And it was an inspiration to me, because at the same time I was very concerned. I was, very interested in the Black Panthers, the Black Power movement. I was, I was involved politically during my time at Yale University, and then musically as well. I mean, the music again. I mean, I was involved in a lot of trying to define, what Black music was. It was the same in a way. It was a parallel interest, a sense of looking at history and tradition as part of what you are as a person. And I think my father had the same sense of, self-discovery, self-rediscovery, I think is a more apt word, in the sense of, rediscovering oneself in the tradition of the Afro-American tradition. And I think that's in part what was really part of our background.
It was really, the feeling I always had was that he sort of went back to a trunk of stuff that he'd had for like 20 years, and suddenly it wasn't work that was just for himself anymore. Suddenly that there was a context in which he could continue that kind of study and exploration, that there were actually courses he could teach on it. Mm-hmm. And that there had been a fair amount of work that he'd done in the 40s that was related to I think in particular slave narratives that he'd never really had any official outlet for. And suddenly it was like, oh, you know, it's all right to do this stuff now. And I guess there was a sense in my family that it was always considered to be valid. It just wasn't marketable, per se. We had a great uncle, Arthur Davis, who is one of the major scholars in Afro-American literature all through this period, who has taught at Howard University for ages, I guess. And he's one of the primary keepers of the tradition from the 20s all the way into the 60s.
Yeah, from the Renaissance.
So that there was always, you know, an awareness of the tradition. And it was just that whether or not, it was public or private, I guess is one way of looking at it.
Ironically, Anthony Davis, your music has been perceived by some people as being a departure from the Afro-American tradition of jazz. People have said that your music is European influenced, and how do you react to statements like that?
Well, I've come to the point where I don't really care. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just trying to create what music, and realize my potential as a composer. And I found that those people, that there are a number of critics and a number of people involved in the arts who are essentially using the black aesthetic as a weapon, and essentially as a weapon to against what I would call, you know, change in music. And I feel that I would be something else if I felt that I were being superficial about what the music I was creating, and I was just trying to, in a way, come up with a new gimmick in music, which I don't think I'm trying to do. And in a sense, I really feel that I feel that the whole issue of European influence in this music is so complicated. I mean, if you go back to the origins of this music, I mean, you have to there is a whole intersection and I think a cross fertilization from European sources as well as from the Caribbean, et cetera. And I think that those people who would superficially, and I think in my father confronted this the same way with with criticism in black literature, those who would separate black literature from all of American literature and look at it as a totally separate domain. I mean, I think a lot of times they miss the point, and they miss what is some of the real values of art. I mean, and they also miss the individualism. And I think that there are always people who will use in the name of tradition, will try to, in a way, to destroy the potential of the individual. And I think that's what it's about, really. And it's really about, a conservative backlash to change, to whatever change is. I mean, there are those of us who would want our music to be the same as it was in 1940 or in the early 1950s or the early 1960s. I don't think it's possible. And I don't think it's particularly relevant now to just revere those periods and not look forward to what's going to happen in the future.
Chris, do you find any similar thing happening in theater? Since there isn't in theater, I think, something as something that's the equivalent of jazz. You know, that's a language that is essentially a black developed language of the art.
Yeah, well, there are, you know, separate traditions that exist as well. I mean, I think pretty much you could say that there's been a black theater has been pretty much separated in the dramatic context from a lot of the other traditions that have been going on in American theater. And in some of the work that I've done, for instance, I worked on a piece of Amiri Baraka's where he was essentially dealing with a form that was evolving into a very episodic form. And that then it was through works like that that you could start to see the interaction between the developments in other forms of contemporary American theater and how they were beginning to influence black theater per se. And that there is a certain conservatism that exists within that in sort of maintaining domestic drama. But again, then when you started to explore a political issue, you naturally get out of that form and develop a much more episodic structure, a much more epic structure. And I think through works such as some of the later work of Amiri Baraka and other playwrights, you're starting to see that simply because of the requirements of the material itself, that they're beginning to transfer, they're beginning to expand and revolutionize the form.
Let's get back to the Opera X, which is your collaborative piece that will be performed beginning on June 27th. Who's going to be directing it? Are you going to?
We have Rhoda Levine is going to be the director of the opera, and we're very excited about her because, I mean, she's much more a director in the sense she's really consulted us on a lot of issues. I mean, I think one of the things is, in a way, I think she's created a whole. We've been able to look at the opera and see how it would flow from thing to thing. So there's a natural evolution in the staging. So that it won't be just these episodes, you know, because there's a danger when you cover a wide span of time from the 20s to the 1960s that you're going to have an episodic structure. And I think that what she's brought to the project is a real sense and instilled in us a sense of how we can create an evolving form that really flows from thing to thing and has a meaning and a certain kind of structural a design that really can work over these span of time.
I want to, in a minute, play another selection from your album Hemispheres, which is music that you wrote for a collaborative dance music piece. But before we hear that, can you give us an idea of the range of music that you're using in the Opera X?
Right. Well, so I'm still composing it now, so I'm not altogether certain of the range, but I think that by the people we're hiring, we're getting some really great operatic talents such as Paul Spencer Atkins, who's from Philadelphia, is going to be playing Elijah, and Peter Lightfoot, who's a baritone, who's singing Malcolm, and then also Avery Brooks is a singer who's going to be doing the character of Street, which is the character Malcolm's Boston Days, who was a kind of a hustler, and so, I think that what's interesting is the way Talani has been writing the libretto is that her language changes so much. I mean, there's a certain, like the beginning of the piece, for example, it starts with a Marcus Garvey meeting in Malcolm's family's house, and that has a certain tinge, almost a West Indian kind of tinged to the way the dialogue sounds, which is natural considering, you know, the origins of it, and a way that you can see in terms of Black history the origins of Rastafarian movement and other movements rooted in the Marcus Garvey movement too, and then when it moves into Boston you see the evolution into more street language and more language in the vernacular, and that poses a really interesting musical problem for me because in the beginning I'm using in the first act, I've developed music that sort of builds this tension surrounding this murder. That's the whole idea of it, you know. And I do that through rhythm. It's much like some of the effects I've created in Hemispheres. And then when it gets in the other kind of language, I have to adjust the music for that too.
Well, X, the opera about Malcolm X, with music by my guest Anthony Davis, and story by Christopher Davis, with libretto by Christopher and Tulani Davis, will premiere on June 27th as part of the American Music Theater Festival. It's their inaugural season, which was announced today. For more information about tickets, you can call 925-0600. That's 925-0600. I want to thank you both, Christopher and Anthony Davis, for talking with us. Maybe we'll have a chance to talk again before or
great.
After
the
run. That would be fun to do. I want to play another selection from Anthony Davis's latest album, Hemispheres, with his ensemble Episteme, with Anthony Davis at the piano. This is the third movement from Hemispheres, which is a dance piece in five movements. We heard the third movement of Hemispheres, compositions by Anthony Davis with his 10-piece ensemble Episteme. And Episteme will be performing in the opera X, an opera about Malcolm X, with music by Anthony Davis, story by Christopher Davis, and libretto by their cousin Tulani Davis. It opens on June 27th in the inaugural season of the American Music Theater Festival. And once again, for more information, you can call 925-0600. Well, I'll tell you what's happening tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air after this report from Shadow Traffic.
Well, good afternoon, everyone.